And welcome back to the Irish Tennis Updates podcast. My name's Adam, your host. This episode, I've been chatting to Colin O'Brien. Colin's been in tennis for a long time, both as a player, when he reached the top 600 in the world in singles, top 350 in doubles, and played Davis Cup for Ireland for a number of years. Since retiring, Colin has moved into the world of coaching. He's currently the performance director at Temple Oak Tennis Club and has been there for the last few years. I really enjoyed this chat with Colin. We talked a lot about his journey in tennis and some of his best experiences and memories along the way. And we also heavily touch on Irish tennis and what Colin thinks could be done to improve Irish tennis at the moment, and also what's changed over the last number of years since he's been involved in the sport. I think this is a really interesting chat. There's a lot to take from it. I hope you enjoy. And here we go. Here's Colin. Colin, a big thanks for coming on to the podcast. How are you getting on?
I'm good, Adam. Doing well. Really enjoying the nicer weather. Thanks again for having me on. It's a pleasure to come on and chat to you.
No, absolutely. I'm looking forward to getting into it. But first question before we get into some of the tennis is, if you could have a superpower, what would you choose and why?
Superpower. I think probably teleportation would be a nice one. Just to be able to go anywhere you wanted at any time. Maybe a foreign country. Obviously, like I said, now Ireland, we have the weather, but maybe certain times in the winter. Obviously, I'm tennis coaching a lot in the winter, so might be good to teleport somewhere nicer, and I bring the group with me as well. That'll be good.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. Good shout. And just to get into the tennis, we'll get into bits of your kind of tennis journey, but maybe just to start with, what's it look like for you now? And I know you're coaching and playing a bit still, playing league. So how's tennis for you at the moment?
It's good, yeah. So I've been working in Temple Oak Tennis Club since 2019. The role there that I took up was head of performance or head performance coach. So I went in there. Catherine Leonard is the head coach, and there's other coaches there as well. So, yeah, I've been working there since 2019. Obviously, COVID had a big effect on things pretty much straight away from March 2020. So even though I've been there probably 4 years now, it's really probably been 2 years of work in the grand scheme of things. But it's going well. Temple Oak is obviously a great club with great history and great tradition. And I always enjoyed playing the tournament there as a junior as well. So, yeah, that's how I'm spending my hours these days, coaching there. And like I said, playing league, played pretty much every campaign. And we're doing well. Like, we're getting out the group more often than not. And again, in the summer league, we've got one group match left and all going well. Hopefully we'll make a semi-final again.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't know if I should bring it up, but I know you were Winter League got close to the title as well. So I know it's going. Temple Oak's doing really well.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good campaign. It was just obviously disappointing to lose the final. We lost 6-4 in the third in the deciding doubles against Fitzwilliam. But yeah, it's never easy to lose a final that tight. It's obviously better to win. But Fitzwilliam are obviously a great team, and again, from our perspective, it's great to be pushing and to be competing, and hopefully we'll get over the line sooner rather than later and win one of those titles.
Yeah, absolutely. And just Colin, maybe to jump back a little bit. So to look maybe at the start of your tennis journey, how did you get into the sport, and how were those early days for you?
So I think my dad was probably a driving force, so to speak, in terms of getting me into tennis. Like, some of my earliest memories are just playing on the road outside my house, like the estate where we lived. Down the bottom of the estate, there's like basically concrete road, and then there's these tar lines. You don't really see them much, but essentially the lines basically create these service box type shapes.
So my dad was
into tennis in those days. He was into kind of the Borg McEnroe rivalry, and he was playing himself. He probably would have got up to kind of a class 3 league standard. So both my parents would say I always had a lot of energy as a kid, which is very different to now. Maybe I've used up a lot of my energy, but my dad used to spend basically time with me playing tennis and playing football. So they were my two main sports growing up. That's how it all kicked off. And then joining Malahide Tennis Club when I was young, I did a little bit of parks there in Malahide Castle as well. But as soon as I kind of got into Malahide Tennis Club, I was kind of on the path then of competing, and Michael Nugent was down there, and Bernadette O'Rafferty was the coach there at the time, and you know yourself, like I said, you're on the path then, and luckily I got onto a Leinster squad then at, I think, 9 years old, and was playing Nace under 9 tournament at 9 years old, so it was it was all go from there.
Yeah, good stuff. And what memories do you have then of as you got a bit older, kind of 14, 15, of getting things in more serious and competing more in more tournaments and everything?
Yeah, so I think I was probably, obviously, you always have dreams of maybe being a professional tennis player and playing at Wimbledon. But in terms of, let's say, a concrete decision that that's what the path I would like to take, or at least try and get there, was I was probably, I would say, 15, 16. And around that time, Owen Casey, who everyone knows well, had come off the tour himself. And I was looking for a private coach. And I basically started going to Owen for so from 16 to 18, I was doing private lessons with Owen. And then I also got involved in the Casey camp as well, which I'm sure people have mentioned many times on your podcast. So at the time, that was great for me because it was a really serious and focused environment, which, like I said, coincided with my mentality at the time. So it kind of all it all clicked in a way. Now, obviously, I still had a lot to work on in my tennis, but in terms of mentally where I was at, I was ready to kind of really be serious and really make a push to be as good as I could be. And then going into that environment and benefiting from all of Owen's experience as well was a huge help at that time.
Yeah, no, good stuff. And just before we kind of talk a little bit about your kind of college time in the States, which I know was kind of, you know, probably an important few years for you. I'd love to hear, obviously, as someone who's still kind of really involved in tennis on the performance side, how would you look back at the kind of your experience and what's maybe changed, kind of for a junior tennis player? What differences do you see, or what do you see has kind of stayed pretty similar?
Well, I obviously worked in Tennis Ireland and Leinster Tennis for 5 years before I was in Temple Oak. So, yeah, I would have seen definitely the progression. Like when I was younger, obviously everybody knows a lot of the clubs were AstroTurf at that time, and I would say AstroTurf is still predominant, or Tiger Turf, or however you want to say it, the artificial grass. So yeah, essentially. Like myself, speaking for myself, I would have been essentially an artificial grass player. Now, like I said, Westwood would have had indoor hard courts, which was great. And some of the lads would have, let's say, developed more of that kind of game. Whereas a lot of us in those days would have, you adapt to your environment, right? So we were kind of tending towards being Astro players, which in Ireland is a good thing. But then when you're looking further afield and trying to play professionally, like I said, if that's your goal, it's probably not the best surface to develop on. So yeah, I would have got maybe a sprinkling or sporadic opportunities to play on, let's say, better surfaces for my development. But in those days, it was a lot of artificial grass. So obviously, a lot of progression, like I said, has been made in terms of clubs that have installed more and more of the artificial clay courts. There's more indoor courts in Ireland now. So definitely the juniors these days, I think there's a lot more options and a lot more opportunities to get on the right playing surface. And I'd be big on that. Like, even after I stopped playing tennis professionally, the generation of players I was in, again, like Conor Nyland and James McGee and James Klusky, we all would have been really pushing the court surface side of things when, like I said, when we were on the tour and then when we were finished, because it was really kind of obvious to us that you're obviously going to compete at a high level on the tour, but you're nearly hamstrung at the same time because you've developed a certain type of game, and then you're trying to compete with world-class players who have developed on proper surfaces, shall we say. So yeah, like I from my own perspective, I'm not sure how the other guys in my generation would have felt, but I always felt like I was playing catch up a little bit because, like I said, I had developed one kind of game, and then I was trying to compete with these guys who were much more at home for the most part on the actual surface we were competing on. So yeah, I think catch up is the right way to say it. Now, with a lot of hard work and dedication, you get there, and I'm very proud of what I achieved. But at the same time, looking back, it definitely would have helped if we had been more on, like I said, those relevant surfaces. And I think if I was to offer advice to those young players coming up, and I think they are doing, I think the coaches and everyone in tennis is much more aware of it now that, again, your environment is crucial. So try and be in those environments and on those surfaces that eventually you will compete on in the long run.
Yeah, so obviously that point on surfaces is definitely a big one, and a lot of people would have talked about that. No, they're definitely going in the right direction with more clay courts and indoors, as you say. But maybe just to hop back into your journey a little bit, onto the your time in college. How do you look back on your years in college tennis?
I look back very fondly. Like, it's such a great opportunity. I was there 4 years. I went to a college called the College of William and Mary. It's in Williamsburg, Virginia. Many people may not have heard of it. It's the second oldest university in America after Harvard, and it educated a few American presidents. So it has kind of a history in and of itself. But in terms of tennis pedigree, more recently, people may have heard of it, but obviously, it's not one of your kind of powerhouse schools, like your Tennessees or your Georges or any of those. But yeah, it was great for me. It was the perfect fit, really. The academics were fairly strong, and the tennis was very good as well. And I got offered a good scholarship there. So, like I said, a great opportunity. My first year was tough, as I alluded to there, with kind of being an artificial grass type player. You're obviously going to America on a high bouncing hard court. So it basically took me the guts of the first year to adapt there. Obviously, you have to adapt to being away from home and all of those things, which I actually found fine, and I was more than happy with that side of things. It was just the tennis, like I said, to use those words again. I felt like I was playing catch up. But again, that first year, while there was pressure because I was probably expected to perform better than I did the first year, just kept working hard, and thankfully, then things started to click the second year. So basically, I went from being out of the lineup most of the first year and getting the odd opportunity to play matches to then going into the second year and starting at number five in the lineup and then jumping to number two by the end of the season. So it's an old cliche, but hard work is the way to go. It gets you a long way.
Yeah,
We had
yeah.
a quote. We had a quote in college on one of our shirts. I'm sure people know it. It's hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. So yeah, I definitely be an advocate for that, because like I said, a lot of my tennis journey has been based on just working hard, and it took me a long way. So
Yeah, no, good, really good stuff. And just still kind of in that college time, what are some of those, maybe with the team, some of those best memories that you had on court?
yeah, there's a lot of good memories. Probably the biggest one, my second year, we actually won the conference. So the conference there is the CAA, the Colonial Athletic Association. It's like I said, it's not the strongest conference, but we actually had Virginia Commonwealth, who were like a top 10 program at the time. We actually beat them the first year. They were number seven, and we beat them. So that was a huge upset win for us. In the second year, I think they had dropped a little bit, but they were still in the 20s, maybe. And we actually beat them in the final. And then another good school, Old Dominion University, were in our conference as well. So I think we beat Old Dominion in the semi-final and then beat Virginia Commonwealth, which was a huge upset. Like, my college, William and Mary, hadn't won that event since, I think, 2001, or sorry, not 2001. It was 91, I think. So like 15 years in the making. So that was a huge deal at the time. Probably my biggest memory. I've got other nice memories as well. I actually played John Isner a few times, believe it or not. We used to go to play the University of Georgia at the beginning of every season. Our coach, Peter Daub, actually had previously been an assistant at University of Georgia, and that's kind of how the networks work over there. So he was able to secure us a match with Georgia every year, who more often than not were number one in the country. And at the time, John Isner was playing for them. So I actually played him my third year and my fourth year. So in the third year, played them in singles and doubles. Lost, I think, 6-4, 6-4 in singles. And then in doubles, we actually had match point against them, but lost. It was very tight. It was like a tie break at the end. So that was obviously disappointing. But then the next year, we were actually lucky enough to get a win over them in doubles. So that's one of the things some of the guys I know in tennis like to bring up. And it's obviously a lovely memory to have a win over Isner in doubles. So yeah, like I said, great memories from college. And then the last year as well, I was actually captain, and we got the team to its highest ever ranking. I think we were up to 31. So again, we weren't kind of a top 10 level program, but in the grand scheme of things, we would have been, let's say, in the 50s, 60s ranking wise as a team. And then, like I said, we went on a big undefeated run to get to 31 and play at the NCAA team event. And I was lucky enough as well to play in the doubles event myself. Myself and my partner Alex Kajana, we made it up to number six. I think helped by that Isner win and a few other good wins, we made it up to number six in the doubles rankings in the States, which was good going, because the American system, I think, as everyone in tennis will know, is a really, really strong environment. You can nearly transplant that environment and put it onto the pro tour, and you're basically probably at challenger slash futures level already. And the proof's in the pudding there. So many players come out of the college system and straight away they're climbing the rankings very fast. So
Yeah, no, great stuff. And you mentioned there that kind of transition from college into the pro game. How ready did you feel having after your 4 years of college to kind of start playing into futures events?
I think my level was there definitely. For example, after my second year in college, there was the Ireland would have, I think at the time it was two futures events. And I actually earned my first ATP point that second summer. So that obviously gives you huge confidence. Now that point fell off then the next year because I played again and didn't go far enough in the tournament. So obviously you lose the point then. But that definitely gives you confidence. Like I said, competing to a high level in college gives you confidence. See these guys going out afterwards and going straight into the tour. For me, myself, my own journey. So I finished, I actually had a bit of a wrist injury coming out of college. And then it was kind of a stop start, not only because of the injury. While I felt like my playing level was good enough, I felt it's obviously a tough transition to start traveling to the events. Like a few other Irish guys would have been traveling, but Conor Nolan was already up to 300 at the time and probably starting to go to challengers even, whereas obviously I was starting in the futures. And at first there weren't a lot of other Irish players, so I actually found the going pretty tough at first, both individually and let's say kind of the lack of a support system, which is obviously a massive challenge if you don't have that. I mean, kind of support in terms of coaching and other guys playing and even a base setup. So DCU was around at the time, but they were focused kind of more on the juniors. But then quite quickly after that, and I always give, I don't know if you know, you've probably heard the name mentioned on your podcast, a guy named Peter Clark, who was a great tennis player. He reached 200 in the world. He was born in Australia but played for Ireland. Peter was not long off the tour at the time as well, and he basically offered to coach myself, James Klusky, Daniel Glancy. He actually coached a few of us for free at the time, which was really generous, and I'll always be thankful to Clarkie for that. And again, he was able to impart a lot of very good information to me at that stage. And then, like I said, quite swiftly after James McGee came out of college, Barry King started playing as well. So Daniel Glancy actually started playing as well. So kind of from a just myself and Connor maybe being the only traveling players for a period, literally 2 or 3 months later, we suddenly had two or three more, which made a huge difference in terms of training, in terms of traveling to events together. So yeah, it all kind of took off from there, and that obviously turned into a very good generation of players. Yeah, I think and then sorry, just to finish that point, on the back of that, DCU, sorry, Tennis Ireland, which is based in DCU, kind of noticed that obviously this generation was taken off, and it's obviously beneficial for them because these guys are going to play Davis Cup. So that they invited us in to train in DCU, and Gary Cahill was the technical director there at the time. So again, that was kind of a big step in terms of getting everyone training in the same venue. Now people still kind of had their own coaches, and not everyone kind of was fully in DCU all the time, but at least it gave you kind of a training base, and then you could go from there. So, like I said, it kind of went from kind of a slow start to then a build up, and then from there, luckily enough, I was able to get to, in the end, I got inside 600 in singles. I think 599 was my highest singles ranking, and then around 330 or 331 in doubles was my highest. So
Yeah.
did pretty well in the end.
And just before you maybe touch on a little bit more of the kind of your journey and your experiences in the Futures Tour, I'm interested. You've mentioned kind of the whole support structure and kind of the structure in Tennis Ireland that there was at the time. I'm interested if you were maybe to be tomorrow, if you're put in a position of power in Tennis Ireland that you could make some decisions, what kind of support structure would you try put in place to help players? Obviously, help people get more success in say in on tour.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like I said, I was in Tennis Ireland as a coach between 2014 and 2019, and obviously at the time, the model, so to speak, was kind of that centralized DCU system where there was a team of coaches there under the technical director, Gary, like I said. And even players from the provinces would be coming up there. So Sam Barry's probably the best example. He would have kind of stayed in DCU, trained in DCU, but basically DCU was his base. A lot of players came from Ulster at the time as well. So it was very much that centralized model. And then in 2019, a decision was made to basically push the development back out to the regions. Now, obviously, always the regions were developing their own players and have done a great job of that over the years. But essentially the centralized system was kind of moved away from, and it was kind of pushed back to the region. So Leinster Tennis was responsible for Leinster, Munster for Munster, etc. So I think in the grand scheme of things, I think facilities wise, while it is a good idea, I think the facilities in Ireland, again, as I'm probably sure everyone in tennis in Ireland is aware, to have the kind of model where the provinces are fully looking after their own players is a good idea. But if the facilities aren't there, it becomes difficult. So if I was back in Tennis Ireland, I think again, not I wouldn't move fully back to a centralized system, but I think it's important to really have that training base there, as I've already alluded to when I was traveling. Like when you come back, it's really important to have that. Now I think it still is there because obviously DCU is still there and John McGahan and Leinster Tennis. I'm sure they have a system where people can come in and train and do everything there that they need. But I think, again, in the grand scheme of things, it would be nice to have more facilities of the high enough standard, like I say, with the proper playing surfaces, so people could maybe base themselves exactly where they wanted to in Ireland. But those facilities, they need to catch up basically to the to get to those kind of levels. So again, to sum up, I think my answer, again, the surface is so important. The facilities, again, I think Ireland has a lot of catching up to do. Now, it's already caught up a good bit, but still there's more work to be done, both at the junior developmental level to have those facilities. And then, like I said, to your question, those players who end up traveling, it's really important you have a support system both at home and then abroad as well, which I think is something we could improve on also. So like just to continue on that line of thought, obviously when you go abroad, the players who do the best have good support systems around them. Now, tennis is an expensive sport, so even to kind of travel yourself, as I know well, is expensive because you're flying to different countries every week. But then you're obviously competing with, let's say, richer tennis nations who would have coaches traveling with the players. Now, I know for every country this is not possible, and Ireland can definitely go a long way. That level of support, but at the same most basic level, it would be good to have traveling coaches. So you can view it from an individual standpoint or a collective standpoint. So let's say me as an individual tennis player, I might just try to put my house in order for myself and say, okay, I need to secure funding for myself. I need to secure sponsorship. I need to hopefully bring a coach with me on the road a certain number of weeks a year. So you have maybe an individual model, but then the ideal, again, if you're speaking from the Tennis Ireland point of view or like a group perspective, you would have maybe more of a collective model where you'd have a group of players. Like I said, we had that where you could travel a lot, and that definitely helps. And then to take that to the next level, you would have a coach who's able to travel with them a certain amount of weeks a year just to really help and provide that support when you're on the road as well as at home, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And I know a lot of these great ideas, I guess they're contingent on the finance being there. So the finance you mentioned, finance, for individual people is tricky. And then if you look at the whole national model, that's also a big issue that the money has to be there for all these great ideas to actually be helpful.
But I know Kevin Quinn. I don't know Kevin Quinn personally, but I know he's now the new CEO, and I'm sure he's well aware of kind of the financial challenges, let's say, that exist in Tennis Ireland. But my hope would be, like I said, I think for better or for worse, Tennis Ireland has a strong part to play in getting players to that level. Like the question I was always asked as a player and then as a coach is, where are all the players? So that's why, let's say, your general tennis follower in Ireland. And what they mean by that is, why do I see no Irish tennis players on TV? Why do I not see Irish tennis players at Wimbledon? Now, obviously, Conor qualified from Wimbledon, and it was just kind of a taster of what it could be like. I think that summer was massive. But I think what everybody wants is to have at least one or more tennis players from Ireland on TV, which would really kind of inspire everyone and really put tennis on the map from an Irish perspective. And again, just to get back to kind of the Tennis Ireland perspective, obviously securing that funding, like you said, whether it be through sponsorship, philanthropy, all of those things. Now, it's a massive challenge, don't get me wrong. And I probably wouldn't be a good person in that role. You need someone in that role who's really able to keep that, let's say, stream of income. But then it's obviously about putting it in the right places as well. So I'd be very much an advocate of basically distributing it to the players, to the best players. Now, obviously, you might have some set criteria or whatever it might be. Like, you can't just be kind of giving money away at the same time, but definitely provide an incentive so those players who have worked their whole life to develop to get to that level. And definitely, we have the players, we have the athletes. Like, you only have to look at other sports like golf, boxing, even cricket took off there a few years ago, kind of not long into Ireland, let's say, really taking it seriously. But we definitely have the athletes across all sports. And I think the big challenge and why you haven't seen more Irish tennis players, like you said, is that funding. Like I said, maybe years ago when I was growing up, was more like that developmental phase, which needs to improve and has got better already. But then eventually, if you have, say, like a 16, 17, 18-year-old who is showing huge promise, ultimately they do need that funding then to make the whole thing viable, basically, and to keep them going and hopefully push them on then to that next level where we all want Irish players to be.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and hopefully that as you mentioned, the kind of the income with the new kind of leadership that Tennis Ireland has, hopefully that's something that we can see, maybe starting to get a bit more of that over the next little while. Maybe we'll just go back a little bit to your journey, and I was looking through some of your kind of results, and one match that was interesting was a win against Dan Evans that you had at 1 point back in the day. So do you have any memory of that match in particular? I know you probably were playing a lot at that time, but did that match stand out at all?
Yeah, I remember it. I have a good memory, so I remember a lot of the matches. But yeah, obviously that stands out these days because Dan has gone on to do great things on the tour, and he's a great player. And I've actually a lot of respect for Dan as well. He was one of the British players that at the time you could really see he had that fire in his belly. Like on the Futures Tour at the time, you would see some players, let's say maybe mentally they weren't fully there, and when the going was good they were fine, but then as soon as the going got tough they might fade away. Whereas Dan, especially from the British perspective, was one of those where you could really see he definitely had potential both physically and mentally. So yeah, it was a great win to get. I remember it was in Nottingham at a Futures, I think a 15,000, so it was first round. I think Dan was seeded five. I think he might have been around 400 or 500 at the time, and he was young at the time, probably 18 or 19. So it was probably nice to play him at that time, because I would have been a few years older, maybe 4 or 5 years older. But my ranking was lower; it was probably 700. So it was still an upset win for me on the day. Played very well. I had obviously you have good weeks and bad weeks in terms of your level. Now it's hard. If you could bottle the good weeks and just keep reproducing them, it would be nice. But obviously the really good weeks are kind of few and far between. But that particular week was a very good week, beating Dan in the first round, I think it was 6-3, 6-2. So yeah, a very good win for me. And probably, like I said, looking back now, that's probably my standout singles win. Now I competed well and had a lot of good wins in singles, but I think ultimately in terms of a name, I think beating Dan is probably the best win I had on paper.
No, absolutely.
And from the doubles point of view, like probably beat more big names in doubles, like David Goffin springs to mind. We beat him in Greece, which is obviously a big win. Goffin was top 10 in the world for years. Beat Gilles Muller in doubles, like I said before, beat Isner in college in doubles. Now obviously singles and doubles are, like, let's be honest, they're basically different sports, and they're all under tennis, but in terms of what you need to be good at, they're very different. My game was as kind of shown by my highest rankings, and I probably could have went higher in doubles. Like I played singles and doubles pretty much throughout because I enjoyed singles. I enjoyed competing in singles. But if I was to focus fully on doubles, like I said, I reached 331. I think probably could have gone higher if I really focused in. But obviously things have to fall in place. You have to get good partners and things like that. But yeah, had beat, let's say, a few good singles players in doubles, which are nice memories as well. And obviously beat good doubles players in doubles as well. So yeah,
Yeah,
all good.
no, it's cool to have some of those wins to look back on, for sure. And just one thing that's interesting, obviously you had with more success on the doubles course, and that's something that a lot of Irish players would have better maybe doubles careers than singles careers in some sense. Do you think there's any particular reason for that we tend to maybe have some more successful doubles players?
Yeah, I think there's a few reasons. Like when I was growing up, I think we trained a lot of doubles. Like these days, you might see players who are very focused on singles. Now that there's it's always been that way, that there will be some players who just don't want to play doubles and just play singles. But we would have played both growing up, as I discussed at length before. The surface element, I think, being an artificial grass player, like in my teens, for a couple of years when serve and volley was still in fashion, and it's very much a still a viable strategy on artificial grass, I actually would serve volley a lot in singles, and obviously that's helping doubles play naturally as well. I think the fast nature of artificial grass as well is obviously helping people's returns, helping people's volleys, like low pickup half volley shots, like all of those things. So while artificial grass can be, like I said, detrimental to ultimately getting to very high levels on the tour, I think there's certain aspects of it as well that would have helped from the doubles point of view, definitely. And then obviously for anyone who goes to America, as I did myself, you know, it's doubles, let's say, is a big deal over there. You train a lot of doubles. It's actually trained very well over there. They know what they're doing. And suffice to say, you see so many players come out of doubles. I know Joe Salisbury was at Memphis, played doubles with Dave O'Hare there, and Joe has obviously gone on to be number one doubles player in the world. So the college system is obviously great for training doubles. So I think all of those things together lead to, or have led to, Irish players being successful in doubles, because that's kind of the pathway a lot of us were on. So
Yeah, no, good stuff. Good stuff. And maybe just to move on a little bit again, Colin, within your journey, maybe to look at Davis Cup, which I know you played for a few years. How do you look back at that as kind of a big part of your career, I guess?
it was great. Obviously, like it's a unbelievably proud moment. It's something that's a big goal as you're growing up. You're going to Davis Cup matches as a kid, watching those matches, and they're always a great atmosphere. Like in those days, and then the days I played, it was the best of five sets, two singles on the Friday, doubles on the Saturday, reverse singles on the Sunday, which I know they still do, but I don't think it's best of five sets as much anymore. Yeah, so my first tie, I think I was fifth man in a tie against Slovenia in Fitzwilliam while I was still in college. But then after college, I was lucky enough to get on the team against Morocco in 2008. That was also in Fitzwilliam. We played indoors, and that was also my first cap in terms of playing opportunity. So myself and James Kluski played the doubles on the Saturday. We ended up losing 6-4 in the fifth, which was obviously very disappointing, but we actually played a great match. Like the guys we played were, I guess, much more experienced on the tour than us. I think they were ranked like 300, 400, and probably in the end their experience told, but that kind of lit a fire under us, because like I said, your first experience, even though we lost, it was really positive. Everything around it was unbelievable. The energy was unbelievable. So yeah, then I was lucky enough to play. I played singles and doubles in a few ties. We played against Ukraine that summer. I played Sergiy Stakhovsky. I don't know if you know him. He actually beat Federer at Wimbledon a few years later, and I think he reached maybe 30 in the world. He was definitely in the top 30. So yeah, in those days we were in group two the whole time, and we were always coming up against good nations who nearly more often than not had, let's say, a diamond of a player, shall we say. So Stakhovsky played for Ukraine. We played in Cyprus. They had Bagdadis. We played Finland, who had Jarkko Niemenen. So you're playing these guys who, let's be honest, well, definitely in my case, who reach singles like around the 500, 600 level. Like those guys are on a whole nother level in terms of singles play anyway. So yeah, it's obviously great to play those matches. Proud moments, like I said, great experiences. And I was lucky enough to win matches as well. Again, I won a match against Ukraine, against a guy who was 200, won some dead rubbers in Cyprus and Algeria as well. So yeah, they're all great experiences, and yeah, it wouldn't change it, wouldn't change it for the world. And I'm sure everyone else who's on the team would say exactly the same.
Yeah, no, brilliant. I'm sure that that's a big thing that you look back on, those Davis Cup days. Would there be a, I guess you mentioned a few matches. How did you find that team environment? I know you'd had a similar thing in college, and a lot of the guys you would have known well, maybe traveling with them on tour a bit as well. So how was that kind of getting to come together with them and play for a, you know, a week at a time?
Yeah, it was awesome, to be honest. Obviously, tennis is an individual sport, and my brain would tend to go to gravitate towards more of the individual pursuit. Like, I'm kind of quite introverted, and like I said, I played football growing up, and that's obviously very much a team environment. So I gravitated more towards the individual stuff. So tennis suited me for that reason. But then, like you said, I would have really enjoyed the team environment in college, definitely. And then, because in college, obviously, you're fully in the team environment, so you're kind of really getting to know everyone. It was the same playing Davis Cup, because I would have been traveling with a lot of the guys as well. But, like, obviously, in terms of Davis Cup, it's just 1 or 2 weeks a year, so it's a lot less. But then it makes those moments even more special. And especially, I guess, the greatest memories again I have are ties, which would have been very much in the balance and going into the last day. And it's coming down to like the last couple of matches, and everybody is fired up, everybody's supporting whoever might be on the court. Probably the standout one, there's a couple of standouts, but the standout one is probably that Morocco tie again, because we were 2-1 down going into the final day, and Luke Sorensen was actually playing Younes Elanaoui indoors. Obviously, Elanaoui was a great player, and we were all basically expecting Elanaoui to win, but Luke, as he tended to do, he was unbelievable in a Davis Cup environment, and his record shows that he would get inspired, and he played an unbelievable match. I think he beat an Elanaoui in 4 sets, and the indoor courts there in Fitzwilliam were rocking that Sunday. And then Conor Nyland finished the job then in the final match, and it was, yeah, it was an unbelievable weekend. So yeah, really good memories.
Brilliant, brilliant. And maybe just to move things on a little bit again, Colin. I know we've talked about your kind of transition into coaching and some of your coaching work. But what do you think is one big thing that you try to bring into kind of coaching, okay, from your kind of experience playing? Or what's something that you try to bring across and help other junior players with?
I think obviously when you're coaching players, there's a variety of things you're working on. Like, you're working on tactics, you're working on technical aspects, you're working on physical in terms of their movement and conditioning. You're working definitely on the mental as well. I think for me specifically, I've had certain people, more let's say adults who I've coached, and definitely better juniors. I think they really notice the benefit of kind of the experience and the mental side. So I think that's definitely, let's say, a strong aspect of my coaching, which can sometimes be underestimated in general. Because obviously, when people see coaching, they're like, oh, it's all technical or whatever it might
Yeah.
be. But like I said, there's definitely four elements that all players need to be working on. I've obviously been in tennis my whole life, so I would have a fair amount of technical knowledge. Again, when I first went into Tennis Ireland, Gary Cahill was great in terms of the team of coaches that were already established there. And he would also bring in foreign coaches who would impart a lot of good information to us. So that was kind of a blessing for me when I first came off the tour to go in there and be benefiting from that great environment.
Yeah. And I guess when you're coaching, something that you mentioned to me earlier is kind of trying to create a really good environment for maybe a team of players, individual players. So what do you think a good environment for kind of developing your tennis looks like?
Now, obviously, it depends. Like, the club, a club environment, and let's say a Leinster Tennis or a Tennis Ireland setup would be different in many ways. But even for the clubs, like I said, a lot of clubs have bought into, like I said before, getting better surfaces and things like that, which I think is crucial. Even at the club level now, you have kind of, let's say, politics in tennis clubs about what is maybe necessary and what's not necessary, and everyone would have their own opinions, and everyone's entitled to their opinions, being members of those clubs. But again, from my perspective, which would have, again, let's say, a desire for Irish tennis to push as far as it can in terms of competing both at a national and international level, I think tennis clubs really need to look at the surface, the facilities they provide, because again, that will attract people in and not. And then to your question about developing groups of juniors to the highest level possible, again, the surface is so important in terms of attracting even younger juniors, it's important that you have those proper surfaces for them to develop on. And then again, I'd be looking to develop all the skills, like all the skills they would need from a young age. So again, we talked about kind of coming into the net and doubles earlier, not so much doubles specifically, but it's very important players are have an all court game. They're able to obviously play from the baseline and grind from there if they need to, but it's also important that they're able to finish points at the net, because even if you're watching the French Open on the men's side especially, it's obviously a slow surface clay, but still players have all of those skills. They have ability to come in, they're able to hit drop shots. So yeah, all of those things are relevant, and I think it's important you kind of develop as complete a game as you can, as quickly as you can, because then you can learn to use all those tools as you grow up, and use and basically become as good a player as you hope.
Yeah, no, that was really good. Interesting. And no, I'm sure, Colin, we could go on for hours, especially maybe about the kind of Irish tennis side and loads of different things that we could touch on. But I'm conscious of time, and maybe just a last few questions before we finish up. A few kind of quick fire questions, if that's okay.
Sure, go ahead. Fire away.
Yeah. So, what is your favorite tournament?
My favorite tournament on TV, definitely Wimbledon. Obviously, it's coming up. My favorite tournament that I played was the Irish Open, which was in Fitzwilliam in those days. I know Carrickmines have had it the last few years, but Fitzwilliam obviously is, let's say, the spiritual home of Irish tennis. And I was lucky enough to win the doubles there at the Irish Open twice. So great, great memories from there. And even if I hadn't won it, I think it was always really nice to play at home and compete at home and have the home comforts. And obviously Fitzwilliam's such a great club as well. So that's definitely my favorite.
Brilliant. And your favorite player?
For player, I think I'd have to say Rafael Nadal for, again, from the mental side, I think he's so tough. He's obviously a lefty like myself. Growing up, though, I would have had a lot of different idols. I would have idolized Andre Agassi in those days. I also would have looked at a lot of the lefties, being a lefty myself. So Marcelo Rios, I don't know if you remember him. He was a great Chilean player. He was number one in the world.
Yeah. Your favorite shot?
My favorite shot. It's probably a pattern, which it's probably a wide serve, follow it in, and just put the usually a backhand volley into the open court. So, like I said, I have a very good tactic on artificial grass, and it definitely, I would often say to people, I made a career out of that tactic, out of that play, and it's not too far from the truth. I think it's pretty relevant.
I know we talked a lot about surface in this, but what's your favorite surface?
I enjoy playing on all surfaces, believe it or not, but again, if I was to play a match that I had to win, I would definitely be choosing artificial grass. But if we're talking tour relevant surfaces, probably outdoor hard court.
Yeah.
Outdoor hard court.
Yeah, good stuff. What is one rule change that you would have in tennis if you could?
That's a good one. I'm not prepped for that one. Rule change. I just like the full matches. Like from my perspective, I know it has to be done sometimes, but the way they've shortened the scoring a lot. Now I know with young kids, like I said, sometimes it has to be done with scheduling and everything, but I think tennis has moved too far away to short scoring, if that makes sense. Now I know it's more, let's say, digestible for people watching maybe, and there's that element of it. But I think as a player, I always enjoy like the full three sets, or like I said, if you're playing Davis Cup, the full five sets. So it'd probably be a change back, so to speak, rather than a complete change of rule.
Yeah. And just a final question, Colin. What's your favorite thing about tennis?
I think the competition, like both when you're playing and then even if you're watching matches, I think it definitely has very gladiatorial feeling.
Yeah.
In singles, it's two players just competing their hearts out against each other. And again, to talk about rules, I don't really like these new rules of coaches being able to help the players, because I think tennis is very much, like I said, a gladiator type sport where it's just you. If it's doubles, it's just you and your partner, and you're trying to work it out. You're doing your best. You're fighting your hardest to try and win. So, definitely the competition. Definitely the fight. That's my favorite
Yeah,
part of tennis.
great stuff. Great stuff. So, Colin, I think that's just the last question there. So, listen, just big thanks for your time again. I've really enjoyed the chat, and I know you've a lot of really good thoughts on kind of Irish tennis and what we could be doing more and how things have changed. So that was really interesting to get that side, and then obviously your journey as well was brilliant. So yeah, no, just thanks very much for your time.
And thanks once again to Colin O'Brien for his time coming on the show this week. Really appreciate it and really enjoyed the chat. I hope you enjoyed it too. Thanks very much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please do consider sharing the episode with anyone else who you think would enjoy it. Also, leave a comment or like the episode as well. Hope you're enjoying some tennis this summer. Let's all get out there, play some tennis. And until next time, I've been Adam, and goodbye.